In the best of times, forgiveness is not an easy thing. Someone owes us something and doesn't pay up, and we feel cheated, and it's hard to forgive. Someone ignores us or gossips about us, and the gossip unfairly sticks to us, and we are injured by it, and it's hard to forgive. Someone says or does something deliberately mean to us, and seemingly has no awareness of how much it hurt, much less any regret, and it sticks in our craw, and it's hard to forgive. Someone ignores us or cuts us off mid-sentence, and we feel diminished, and it's hard to forgive. Whenever any of that sort of thing happens, it's hard to feel forgiving. It's hard to say, no matter, it's okay, I forgive you. I'm ready to let it go and move on. It's hard to forgive in those situations because although we know that what happened isn't the end of the world, even if we feel mortally wounded, at least emotionally speaking, we struggle with the letting it go. Letting go of the hurt, the blame, the unsettledness, it's really difficult to do. Maybe we are afraid to let the offender off the hook, lest we encourage more bad behavior, lest they don't have to face the consequences, the implications of what they did. Or maybe we don't want to let the other person off the hook because, well, that's not right. That's not fair. Shouldn't people have to pay for what they've done? Shouldn't the person who offended or hurt us get a taste of that offense, that hurt, a taste in their own mouth, on their own tongue? I think sometimes we could give forgiveness a better consideration if we only knew for sure that the person who hurt us now has also had the experience of hurting as much as we hurt. If their wounds were as deep as ours, then we would know they understand just how bad their behavior was and how much hurt it caused. The scales would somehow be balanced by pain, and we could move on more easily. I said that in the best of times, forgiveness is not easy, and then went off on a whole bit about why it's so hard, generally speaking. But let me finish that first thought. In the best of times, forgiveness is not easy, but it's even harder now. Why? Because there is so much fracture and misunderstanding and anxiety and defensiveness in the air. And because there's not only the emotional separation to deal with between us and those who hurt us, like there always is in the midst of conflict or offense, but now there's so much physical separation between us as well. And that makes it harder to get with people to sort things out. And that's often a key element of moving from offense to forgiveness. When we are ready to forgive or willing to try to forgive, there's something about being able to look someone in the face and see their reaction, read their response, know whether or not they get it, something that is important but is less available, less accessible right now. And as I said, right now, everything is supercharged with difficult emotions, with fear, with anxiety, with a sense of separation at all levels, with uncertainty about what tomorrow will bring. If we are inclined to try to control our interactions and their outcomes in the best of times, then we are amped up in regard to that even more right now. If we are generally someone who feels vulnerable walking through life, then we are feeling especially naked right now, unprotected. If we are inclined under normal circumstances to approach conflict by conducting our accusation, indictment, trial, and conviction conversations mostly in our own heads rather than with other actual people, well then right now it's even worse because it's so much harder to get alongside other people. Conflict, always difficult in regular times, seems more difficult now. Conversation, harder. Confrontation, harder. Perspective, harder. Forgiveness, harder. But here's the thing. Present circumstances aside, present context aside, forgiveness is probably always hard for us. Because no matter what is happening in the world around us, mostly what we call forgiveness is transactional in nature. We are ready to give something in order to get something. So under the banner of forgiveness, we ask for and offer some kind of payment or trade. We want to make a deal, and that never works very well, even in the best of times, even in the best of circumstances. Do you understand what I'm saying? To forgive, to most of us, is to transact something with someone else. It's to ask, to get and ask for some kind of compensation for the hurt. Even if the payment is just the assurance from the offender that they understand what they have done and they won't do it again. So now, when transaction is more difficult, forgiveness seems more difficult because we can hardly imagine making things right without some ability to transact something, to make a deal, a new arrangement. Maybe that's what Peter has in mind when he offers the number 7 as the number of times you should forgive someone else who offends you. 7 seems like a pretty big number when you're thinking about letting an offender off the hook, not demanding any payment or compensation for the hurt. 7 seems like a pretty big number when you're thinking about the demands of such non-compensated forgiveness, because forgiving the same person 7 times in a transactional model means that after the first non-compensated forgiveness, you may still have 6 more conflict-driven encounters to go with that person, 6 more negotiations, 6 more settlements, 6 more emotionally demanding and perhaps unsatisfying kinds of transactions. Peter offers the number 7, and Jesus says, not just 7 times, but 77 times. And it seems like an entirely unreasonable kind of transactional keeping score kind of approach to forgiveness. Who can handle that many more encounters without resolution? Who has the patience to keep putting your heart out there to get what you need and never getting it? Make a deal 7 times? That's a lot, but it's not crazy. 77 times? Forgive 77 times? That's a lot of transaction. But you know what? Jesus isn't transactional in his relationships. He doesn't give this in order to get that. He doesn't cut deals. He's not a negotiator. He's something else entirely. He's a transformation agent. Forgiveness in his frame isn't forgiving to get something. It's forgiving to change something. And so rather than thinking about forgiveness in transactional terms, maybe the way Peter thinks about it at first, let's think about it in transformational terms, the way Jesus always thinks about it. And if you think of it that way, then what Jesus is saying is that you forgive and forgive and forgive until forgiving is part of your nature. You don't forgive and forgive and forgive until you get what you want from the offender. You forgive and forgive and forgive until attaining your own internal freedom from bitterness and resentment is part of your skill set, maybe even your superpower. Again, in the way Matthew writes this passage, we may get tripped up because the parable that follows the conversation between Peter and Jesus certainly seems transactional. The servant with the huge debt is forgiven by the master and immediately turns around and demands payment of a small debt from a fellow servant. The servant with the huge debt seems to not understand the if this, then that nature of the forgiveness he's experienced. If I forgive you, then you forgive others. And certainly you can look at it that way as transactional. If I give you this, now you give the same to others. And it's even offered in the parable in I did this, now you do that language. But if we read through the frame of transformation rather than transaction, the story shifts before our very eyes. I forgave your debt, and that forgiveness gave you back your life, didn't it? And regaining your life, your debt-free life, changes everything. Doesn't it? Including you. Your attitudes toward others, your self-perspective, the kind of burdens you no longer have to carry. Knowing you are forgiven changes your life inside and out. Now you can live without fear. Now you can take care of your family. Now you can walk down the street with your head up and a spring in your step. The forgiveness I gave to you changed your life. It was offered for the purpose of transformation. But now you turn around and instead of spreading the joy, you punish the one who looks just like you did moments ago. You got a new life. But your first instinct is to take away the life of your fellow servant? What's wrong with you? I gave you transformation, and you turned around and walked right back into the old pattern of transaction. Transaction versus transformation. That's the difference. And we need transformation. We don't need more transactional relationships. We need more transformational relationships. And forgiveness is what opens that door. Forgiveness has the power to transform. My friend David Loos says this about forgiveness: to forgive is to live free in the present and hopeful about the future, while to not forgive is to be dragged down and kept captive by the past. Forgiveness is life. So in the parable, the servant who is forgiven his unpayable debt by his master and now has the ability to live free has been given a transformational gift, a transformational opportunity. But because he won't forgive his fellow servant who owes a much smaller debt, he's dragged down again and kept captive. In the parable, the master berates the unforgiving servant and then hands him over to be tortured. It sounds like vengeful punishment. Is it? Or is that just the reality of hard-heartedness? That is, if you can't forgive, you will be tortured from within. You will undergo what is really pointless and needless suffering, only it won't be suffering at the hands of some external captor. Rather, it will be suffering that springs up from the darkest places within yourself. You will be your own jailer. In that sense, hell is in your own heart. Forgiveness, however, is the key to unlock the door of that dark cell. It's the key that unlocks the door to life. I've been talking about transactional versus transformational, but Richard Rohr also offers an interesting pair of words to describe the way of the world versus the way of God's kingdom. Rohr talks about retribution versus restoration, retributive justice versus restorative justice. When things aren't fair, what kind of justice do you want? Because the kind of justice you want will guide the kind of forgiveness you are capable of giving. So when you are wronged, do you want retaliation or do you want restoration? It's a really important question because it is not only our emotions that guide us in such situations, but our intentions, our values can guide us too. What do you really want? To be justified, to be right, or to be healed, to be whole? Rohr says, retributive justice promotes a dualistic system of reward and punishment, good people and bad people, and makes perfect sense to the ego. I call it the economy of merit or meritocracy. The system seems to be the best that prisons, courtrooms, wars, and even most of the church are equipped to do. The trouble with it is that we define God as punisher in chief instead of healer, forgiver, reconciler. Thus, the retribution model has been legitimized all the way down. However, he continues, Jesus and many mystics, indigenous cultures, and other wisdom traditions show an alternative path toward healing. In these traditions, sin and failing are an opportunity for the transformation of the person harmed, the person causing harm, and the community. Mere counting and ledger keeping are not the way of the gospel. Our best self wants to restore relationships and not just blame or punish. This is the economy of grace and the operative idea of restorative justice. I find that helpful because often I hear the words justice and mercy placed on opposite ends of the spectrum, as if the one who cares about justice is the one who cares about fairness, while the one who cares about mercy doesn't care about making things right. But again, that is transactional thinking rather than transformational thinking. In Rohr's way of talking about justice, making things right again, there are two ways to attempt to do it: retribution or restoration. And one actually works while the other does not. One leads to freedom, the other to bitterness. Restorative justice, Rohr notes, does not perpetuate the cycle of violence. He says we all need to apologize and we all need to forgive for humanity to have a sustainable future. Otherwise, we are controlled by the past, individually and corporately. Forgiveness, he says, is to let go of our hope for a different past. Reality is what it is, and such acceptance leads to great freedom and the possibility of healing forgiveness. Transformation, not transaction. Restoration, not retribution. Healing rather than more violence. Those are the building blocks as well as the outcomes of forgiveness. I guess the questions we should be considering are ones like these. Do you want to be justified or do you want to be free? Do you want to become what you judge is worst about the one who offended you? Do you want to swallow that poison or do you want to be healed? Do you want to give and get in equal measure, or do you want to stop measuring? Do you want to get revenge, or do you want to be reconciled? And of course, even if the right answers to those questions seem obvious, it's easy to know what you want in an ideal world. Getting yourself there is another matter. Even if the right answer is obvious, that doesn't mean that the path is easy or smooth. If forgiving means that a huge weight has been lifted from your shoulders, then sometimes getting there is like pushing a rock up the side of a mountain. It is not easy to let go of hurt. It's not. But then remember, just one moment when you were forgiven. Remember what you had done, or what shame you carried, or how you struggled with the burden of wrongdoing. Maybe you didn't apologize to the one you hurt or offended, or maybe you bristled at the idea that you were the offender rather than the offended. But deep down, you knew that you were in the wrong, at least to some degree. And then, if you can remember just one moment when you were forgiven, remember what it felt like when the person you hurt or offended said, "It's okay. It really is." Did it change something in you? Did you feel awash in peace, finally? There's no miracle quite like the miracle of being forgiven. And there's no miracle quite like the miracle of being able to forgive. Forgiveness is freedom. It's new life. Choose life. Amen. Please join me in a time of silent prayer and reflection.